Audiobook. Audiobook release. Podcast. Authors. Narrators. Interviews. Industry. News. Reviews. Sponsored by eaudioproductions.com. Welcome to the Audiobook Release Podcast, a show for audiobook lovers. Stay tuned as we share the latest news from the audiobook industry. We interview established and upcoming authors. We talk with popular narrators and review a wide range of audiobooks. Brought to you by eaudioproductions.com.
Hello, thank you for tuning in to the Audiobook Release Podcast. I'm Matt.
And I'm Leah. Our guest today is Naomi Kennedy, author of The Boy with the Best Laugh. Naomi grew up in Queens, graduated from St. Mary of the Woods College in Indiana with a degree in art and journalism.
Now, before we get to our interview with Naomi, here's a short sample of the audiobook version of The Boy with the Best Laugh.
Adam and I were just 17 when we started gambling on horses. He always bet to win, and I, the more practical one, predictably bet on third place to show. Then there were those wild and crazy evenings when we both placed exacta perfecta bets together, choosing one horse to come in first and another to come in second. If your horses came in exactly in that order, your bet was a winner. But we chose our horses nonsensically, causing us to lose over and over again. One evening, on our way to Roosevelt Raceway, a storm hit. Lightning illuminated the sky, creating an eerie vision of night into day. Because of its flatlands, Long Island had the most magnificent aerial views. Thunder roared as we drove further east. We gasped in amazement as pellets the size of golf balls hit Adam's new, recently acquired, purple 1967 Volkswagen Beetle, which already had little dents decorating its fender from end to end, giving it his interpretation of a lived-in look.
That audio clip was great. Welcome, Naomi. It's great to have you with us today.
Hi. Hi, Leah. Hi, Matt. Thank you for interviewing me. It's nice to meet both of you.
It's great to talk to you, too. So while doing our research, Naomi, we discovered that you're a journalist, an editor, a poet, an artist, and a jazz vocalist. Obviously, you're a very creative person. How did you get interested in writing?
I guess it started way back with poetry. I was writing poetry way back in my 20s. Actually about the Vietnam War. I didn't remember that until recently.
Wow.
And later on, I had my own poetry group and belonged to other poetry groups. And I wrote some poetry, obviously, and short stories. And then when I went back for my degree in art and journalism, I started a course in novel writing. And I have no idea what sparked my interest with that. It had to be in my subconscious. I've always believed that. And my professor told me that I really had something going there, that he believed that it was a winner, which was shocking to me, and then stopped at certain points. I didn't know if I should go forward. And it took me 13 years of research and writing and editing, long 13 years.
Well, it sounds like the professor was right. He knew you had something in you, and you did, because you took you 13 years. You stuck with it.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
I kind of shocked myself. Thank you.
Well, that's good, because not that many people can be that dedicated, right?
Yeah, somebody said to me, a close friend, a very long time ago, I said, why am I doing this? You know, what is the point in this? Where is it going to go? And she said to me, just do it. Those were very powerful words to me at the time. So I just did it, and I kept on going. It's what my dad would call blind faith, believing in something, blind faith.
Yeah.
And so then you kept writing it. And then were you showing it to your friend when you were writing it?
No, actually. But I did belong to a writing group for years in my local library. And we all went around and read what we were writing. And somebody said to me in the group, I had no idea what I was writing about, to tell you the truth. I didn't really know how to do it, you know, to write a novel, where to begin, where to go with it. Because I wasn't at that point, I wasn't going for school, you know, journalism. And the person said to me, it sounds like you're writing about Vietnam.
Oh, really?
I didn't realize it, honestly. I just was writing and writing and not thinking about it. And then I really focused and went in that direction and realized I wanted to write about a draft dodger, because it was very important to me, actually. I thought about it. You know, I guess you don't realize as time goes on what you're thinking about. It's floating thoughts in and out of your head.
And what's impacting you?
Yeah, yeah.
Right, and obviously the war had a great impact on you when you were young.
It did, yeah.
Once again, a second person believed in you and said, keep going.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. My professor, you're right. Thank mm-hmm. you.
Yeah, so it's nice that you have people encouraging you and saying, keep going, because some people don't have that support.
You're correct. Yeah, it's very important. Actually, that's why writing groups are important, because everybody kind of supports each other and pushes them forward.
Well, what sort of books influenced you? Like what writers?
You know, I'm very big on Hemingway. I can't say that my writing is anything like his was. I'm a grammar freak and he was not. And he would have run-on sentences and it was incredible. But I would say that reading his work off and on for years, for some reason, did influence me. He was incredible. His experiences in life, just everything that he knew, his knowledge, it just made me think and made me want to write, actually. I can't really identify. We were so dissimilar, you know what I mean?
Right. But he had a big influence on you. I completely understand. Well, you told us it took 13 years of research and writing to finish your book. What was the challenge along those 13 years?
A lot of research, tell you the truth. Things that I really didn't know even about Vietnam. A lot of, oh my God, you know, when you write a book, I didn't know any of this. When you write a book, everything that you write, you have to validate. You have to make sure everything is correct or, you know, it's not going to sit right. So even though I was a musician all my life, I even had to verify the music, the time, the artist, because I talked about that a little bit, anti-war music, that type of thing, historical events. There's also a character in the book, very special to me. She was she's a character. So, you know, she's autistic. And I certainly had to do a lot of research on that. I learned a lot. And the main character, Adam, he had diabetes. I had to research that a lot because I didn't know what I was writing. So it was very interesting. I learned so much. But I tell you where I really learned the most. I kept on researching and researching, not knowing what direction I was going in. And then I stumbled across, it's a long time ago, so I'm not exactly remembering, but some kind of groups online of men who were draft dodgers and they were still living in Canada. And I have no recollection of how I kept pursuing it and pursuing it. And I got in touch with some. I was even in touch with Mark Satin. He's a very well-known activist. I can't believe I got that far. And I really found out what it was like to be a draft dodger to some extent. You know, I don't think I would have realized unless I had spoken to several men. And I had something very interesting happen to me about this book that was one of the most challenging parts, but it was after I wrote the book, because you're asking about while I was writing it. But when I became involved with social media, there was a lot of reaction to my book from autistic organizations, families of autistic children, but also of families of draft dodgers and veterans. And there were, I think it was in Facebook, there were two men that were battling back and forth. They were angry with each other about my book. Well, one of them was. He was saying, well, it was a three-way conversation, the two men and myself. You know, how dare I write a book about draft dodgers after everything that he had gone through in the war? And the other gentleman was trying to support me by saying that freedom of speech, we have to, the whole idea of the book was to enlighten people. It wasn't to offend people or upset people. Mm-hmm. It was interesting. It was very important. I'm glad I did it for that reason. I had to quiet them down in their arguments on Facebook. It was an incredible experience.
Yeah, because your book touched them so deeply, they felt the need to talk about it or discuss your book. So that's, you got them thinking.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Got me thinking too. Yeah, right. I didn't realize where anything was going. I was learning along the way, even though it was after the fact of writing it, I was learning.
I want to jump back. And you said that there are men who dodged the draft in the United States and they live in Canada. Are they allowed to come back into the United States or?
Some certainly were. There are, I'm trying to remember how many. I don't want to give you facts that are not accurate. Oh my gosh, there are many thousands, many, many. I just don't have the figure in front of me who are still living there with their families.
Wow.
But they did come back. Many of them did come back with President Carter at the time. He you know, allowed, I forget what that was called at the moment. Mm-hmm.
But he permitted them back into the country.
Yes, yes, that's right. But I think that was 1977, if I remember correctly.
Well, I grew up in Kent, Ohio. And of course, Kent State University is there. So May 4th is a big deal in our town. And the song Four Dead in Ohio is, when you talked about songs, that's important in our mm-hmm. our city.
It was a little difficult to hear you.
Oh, really? Yeah, sorry. Oh, sorry.
Sorry. So I'll just repeat it real fast just so that sure. you have an idea. So Leah said she grew up in Kent, Ohio, and the song Ohio.
Oh, Four Kent, Dead in
mm-hmm. Kent State. Yeah.
yeah. So yes. that, when you yes. were talking about music, that reminded Leah that that's a very powerful song from the town that she grew up in.
Yes, Kent State. The shootings there is yes. what I'm thinking about right
yeah.
now.
Yeah. May 4th.
You're referring to, yes.
It's
yes.
It was a big, big deal. And well, obviously, it's yep. a, no, it didn't sound. It was obviously a very big deal in our town, and there were tent cities, and there was a lot going on.
Yeah, I wrote quite a bit about that. I guess it was on Instagram. I have a lot of posts there about that. A lot of information, if anybody's interested in reading.
Yes.
I've spent a lot of time. Yeah, and again, I was learning as I was writing and researching, even after the fact. There's so much information, and I think that's why it's so important. Do you know, in our school systems in the United States, Vietnam War is not taught adequately. There's so much opposition and some, you know, arguments, and even with kids from their parents, they hear about it. Yes, so they stay clear of it. They just mention it. It's not like, you know, World War II. They taught it, you know, quite a bit.
Right.
In mm-hmm. our school system. Yeah.
Oh, that's very interesting.
Yeah. Well, Naomi, how did you decide on the title of your book?
That's a pretty funny story.
Good.
It was very difficult. Again, I didn't know what I was doing. So I was researching, how did other authors do that? How did they come about that? I started off thinking I was going to call it The 70s. I have a poem to that effect. It's called The 70s. And somebody told me that something, maybe it was a TV, a movie or a program, it was called The 70s, and I better think elsewhere about
sure.
that.
There's a TV show called That 70s Show.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah. And I read about a famous author. I think it was Anne Tyler. She won an Pulitzer Prize, but not for this particular book. But I think she mentioned in one of her interviews for one of her books about a title that she had no idea why she named it. Had nothing to do with the book. I loved it. I really loved it. But I didn't want to go in that direction. I kept thinking about it. And then I got to one line in my book. Well, it's actually, that's the title, The Boy with Best Laugh. But I got to a line that Adam had the best laugh. And I remembered there's a tiny bit of the book that is based on a very close friend of mine when I was a kid. And he did have the best laugh. So I put it together that way.
Oh, that's
I was
great.
Glad to do it that, yeah.
That's wonderful. Did you have any other titles in mind, or is that just how
it
happened?
I think that was it. That was hard enough.
That is great.
Well, I just like how you do all this research. It's pretty neat, even the title you're researching, how to pick the right title. Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, thank God for the internet, right?
Yeah.
I wouldn't be able to do this without it.
You'd be spending a lot of time at the library.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't think you'd find this type of information in the library years ago.
Right.
Or the World Book Encyclopedia. We thought that was golden in those days.
That was a couple of years ago.
Yeah, right. Sure.
So is there a message you want readers to take from your book?
A message. Well, it certainly has to do with draft dodgers. I guess for readers to try to understand that draft dodgers during the Vietnam War struggled also, that, you know, they were veterans, don't want to hear, it's a dirty word, draft dodger, but, you know, they were frightened. That's the message I got from the men I spoke with in Canada. They strongly felt that everybody knew this, that the U.S. should not have fought in the Vietnam War, but I understand that veterans don't feel that way. They were there and they suffered greatly, obviously.
Yes.
But, you know, draft dodgers, they felt shame, they felt despair, and they had to leave their homes and they didn't know what was going to happen. And I guess what the bottom line is that fear is a part of being human. And I think that some of the people that I spoke with, veterans, don't want to hear about that. I kind of understand both sides of the story, but that's my message, to at least be open to understanding. Mm-hmm. Even this many years later.
Right. It's still vivid for a lot of people.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, The Boy with the Best Laugh is also available on audiobook, which is produced by eaudioproductions.com, and it's available now on Audible. So let's talk about the audiobook version of The Boy with the Best Laugh. It was edited, mixed, and mastered by eAudio Productions. How did it all come about doing an audiobook version?
Are you asking me how I felt about it?
Yeah.
I think it was fantastic, to tell you the truth.
So tell us what made you decide to do an audio version of your book.
Elias found me, I think it was on Facebook, and he offered and spoke about it. And for a while we talked about it. And then I started to realize how popular it was. It seemed to be very important, and I was really thrilled. And it just sounds great, to tell you the truth. I love it. I've been listening to audio besides reading, obviously, all my life, but I've been listening to audio for the last 20 years and enjoying it. I've got to tell you, listening to my audio, I was really impressed. It was like I was listening to somebody else's book. It was really good. And what is his name? I said, Greg, is that his name?
Yeah, you said Greg.
Yeah, he did a fantastic job. He really did.
How fun to hear your characters come to life.
That's exactly what happened. I was sitting back and thinking and listening to them in a different way. And it actually made me cry a couple of times.
That's great.
That's kind of embarrassing. You're crying in your own book.
Well, no, because you put so much time and effort into this book, and it's like your baby.
Yeah, thank you. That's right. No, but I mean, the way he portrayed several scenes and that were upsetting in the first place, and he did a really good job.
I think that's a success. If you wrote it and then you heard the words and it brought an emotion out of you, I think that's a huge success.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you.
I mean, we're all our own worst critics, right?
That's for sure.
So it appears that eAudio Productions has a great talent for narrators.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Very impressed.
Did you get to choose which narrator?
Yeah, we worked together for a short time, and it was very new to me doing something like this, and we both agreed about Greg. And working with Greg was a new experience for me, too. I'd have to listen to each chapter, and it was very exciting, really.
And then if you noticed that there was something that needed a little tweaking or something?
Exactly. And then he would correct it, and he'd do a great job once again.
Wow.
So I give him a lot of credit.
That is very exciting. So what kind of advice would you give other authors who are thinking about making an audio version of their book?
Oh, absolutely. Go forward with that if they can do it. It's really two different ways of understanding, listening, appreciating a book. Reading is one way and listening is another way.
Right. Well, there's certainly different audiences, right? I mean, that somebody commuting an hour or two each way, or somebody who happens to have sets aside time to be able to read. They're different people.
I think we all have the need to, because we're all so busy in our lives, to listen to audio, different times when you're in the kitchen cooking and, trying to pass the time, or traveling in the car. My son is listening to the audio in the car as he's driving.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, that was nice. It's different. He read parts of it, of course. Over the years, I've been writing for so long. What do you think of this chapter? Oh, God, here we go again.
Did he grow up with you writing the book?
No, my son is 42. Oh.
Okay. So what is the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
I think I mentioned it before, actually, that a friend of mine, very close friends, when I was struggling with the book, not knowing if I should go forward or not. Why was I wasting my time? And she said, just do it. Mm-hmm. And I think those are very powerful words for something like this. Don't know if I mentioned it before. I was thinking about it anyway, that my dad used to say, blind faith, have blind faith. And that's what it really was. Just go forward, have blind faith, and just do it.
Yeah, that's great. And we read that you're thinking about writing another book.
Yeah, I did start, and it's exactly the same way that I started this book. Off and on, a little bit here, a little bit there, and then all of a sudden I'll get into it for sure. But yes, it's a sequel, and same characters with an addition of a veteran, actually. I'm going to go in that point of view of what he went through and scenes, during the war, and that is a lot of research, very unfamiliar to me. It's upsetting, actually, all those, the violent scenes
sure.
that I'm reading mm-hmm. about, yeah.
Well, maybe the Facebook fan who was
Yeah.
Or maybe he'll be happy to, you know.
That's right.
That you're telling his side. Yeah, the way he sees things. Yes. From a veteran's point of view.
That's a very good point. Yes. Thank you. He'll be looking for me online.
Right.
Another quick question. When you were writing, I know you said it was off and on, but did you prefer I'm going to sit down and write for 5 hours, or did you just write whenever it happened to hit you?
Wouldn't that be nice? To sit for 5 hours. No, I used to go to the library when I really got into it and got very serious. I was always at the library because that's where it was peaceful and quiet and the phones weren't ringing. And yeah, I would find myself being there for many hours, several days a week. Being home was quite difficult, but today it's quieter and I'm writing late at night. The phones aren't ringing. I mean, very late at night. So I am writing a little bit. I'm hoping that it won't be another 13 years, but it's possible. A lot of authors, I've been very surprised that it takes them that long to write a book.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah, it sure is.
Well, Naomi, congratulations on writing your book.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
And just as a reminder, the audio version of The Boy with the Best Laugh is available on Audible. Naomi, thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you, Matt. Thank you, Leah. Very nice speaking with you. I appreciate everything you've done.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Audiobook Release Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast to ensure you'll never miss an episode. We value your opinion, so feel free to post a rating or review. Stay tuned for the next episode of the Audiobook Release Podcast. Brought to you by eaudioproductions.com.